So before I get into this episode, I'd like to bring to light something I've been working on. If you're subscribed to my blog, you've probably heard of my Hunter Up initiative. If not, I'll try to sum it up for you. I'm afraid that hunting as we know it can go away, especially with the declining numbers of new hunters each year. I think it's so very important that we take the time and make a true effort to take the bull by the horns and each and every one of us personally introduce one new hunter into hunting. I'm also very unhappy with the hunting community as a whole, and its lack of respect for fellow hunters. We as a community spend a lot of time bashing each other over stupidity instead of promoting one another. The amount of energy that we spend arguing can be spent on more important things like conservation or introducing a kid into hunting. So I'm issuing all of you a challenge to take the time to help fellow hunters, introduce kids, and for God's sakes, stop promoting content that puts hunters in a bad light. Resist the urge to engage in these foolish arguments that we have. Stop the bashing. When you feel strongly about something or you disagree with a hunter, a fellow hunter, take that subject off social media, message that person directly, have a one-on-one debate about it. You're either going to leave understanding where that other person's coming from, or you're going to have said your piece and you move on. We're not all going to agree with the way others do things. And we don't have to. But what we should be doing is supporting all legal hunting because all we're doing is showing weakness and unrest within our community. And this just leaves chinks in the armor that let hunting, anti-hunting groups tear down what you have built, what we've all built. And we need to support hunting and hunters and use our efforts for good, like conservation and hunters education and introducing new hunters instead of wasting our time arguing about who predator hunts, who uses a Matthews and who uses a Hoyt. I mean, the stupid arguments that go on is just, it's okay to have debate, it's okay to have opinion, but really think about what it does when you argue on social media. You got to understand if there's something that's negative out there and you keep pushing it, I can't stress enough, if you don't understand the way Facebook algorithm works or Instagram or any of these, it's you comment on something, oh, you're an idiot for putting that out there. And you commenting on that just pushes that content up the ladder further and further until it gets wider and wider and the net gets larger and larger. And the more people can see it, the more people comment on it, the more people can see it. And eventually it's going to get in front of the eyes of somebody who's an anti-hunter and not just arguing about the hunt. And it's not good for us. So please stop the bashing and, get out there and help introduce hunters into hunting. Thanks again. And this episode, you can thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for bringing it to you. And this Hunter Initiative, they're helping me out with it. I appreciate what they're doing. And let's just jump into the next episode. Thank you. Hi, welcome to Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're at the Shoot for Hope with the Broadhead Brotherhood, and it's a cancer benefit. We're out here supporting them. They support us. We are going to talk about deer hunting in Arizona with Matt Woodward. And Matt's been on the show a couple times, and he's been a guide for 15 plus years. And so, Matt, give us a little rundown about yourself.
Sure. Like you mentioned, I've been outfitting and guiding for a little over 15 years now, and own and operate Borderland Adventures. Most of our hunting is down in Sonora, Mexico, a little bit in Chihuahua, and also in New Mexico. Still dabble a little bit in Arizona, still run a handful of hunts in Arizona, but pretty much hunt full time, and really happy to be here. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, Matt's been on the show a few times, talked about elk hunting, we've talked about coos deer hunting. So if you missed those episodes, jump on there and find them. And I'll put those links to that in the show notes. But today we're going to talk about, you know, from an out-of-state perspective, hunting Arizona, what kind of opportunities we have here to hunt. It's part of our DIY series that we're doing this month. And so Arizona gets a bad rap for, you know, because of our draw system's pretty tough and stuff. But there's quite a bit, especially when it comes to deer, there's quite a bit of hunting opportunity.
It really, really is. Lots and lots of opportunity. We're here with a bunch of archers today, and we do have 10 weeks of unlimited archery season here in Arizona, between August, early September, December, and January. So lots and lots of over-the-counter archery opportunity here, pretty much statewide. We have a few draw areas as well. And then a lot of our rifle tags are actually relatively easy to draw. Like, as you mentioned, Arizona gets a bad rap. We've got the Strip and the Kaibab that are really extremely difficult to draw. It could take most of a lifetime to draw.
Right.
There's a lot of tags available in the state for guys with 0 or 1 point. So still lots of draw opportunity for those October, November rifle seasons. So we do have a lot of opportunity for non-resident hunters here in Arizona. Really underutilized, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, leftover tags are... You know, they're great. I think they're great hunts.
Absolutely. The leftover. Yeah, I started my business for a lot of years hunting those leftover hunts as first choice hunts. We were applying for those same hunts as first choice hunts. There's still leftover tags in those units, has been for decades at this point. And those are fantastic hunts. Down on the border, there's a little bit of intimidation factor down there. And I think that's what keeps some folks from applying down there. I think that's a little bit unwarranted. There's lots of great opportunity down there, but of course the border does have its issues.
Yeah.
There's no denying that, but it's a wonderful place to hunt with lots of opportunity and lots of tags available.
Yeah, lots of deer.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of deer. Lots of deer to be chased for sure.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we have a question. One of the people out there have a question for you.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to know why do people feel like that down south is intimidating? What's going on down there? What's your take on that?
Sure. Absolutely.
So the question was, why do people feel like it's intimidating to hunt down south, or what, you know, what's scary about hunting down south?
Sure. It's got some illegal immigration issues. That's actually dramatically improved over the last couple of years. I think we've seen a pretty good decrease in traffic down there. But that's really the biggest concern for them. We don't have a lot of interaction between immigrants and hunters. Mm-hmm. It happens occasionally. Guys lose some water occasionally. Things like that happen. If you hunt down there for a steady week, there's a pretty good chance you're going to glass some up at some point. It doesn't always happen, but sometimes you'll see a couple groups in a busy day.
You know?
I think that's really the only reason, and you've got some additional traffic out there. I do a lot of hunting just on the other side of the border, between Nogales and, say, Sasebo, Arizona, right along the fence, basically. And so we see both sides of that traffic. Like I said, it's improved over the last few years. It's still steady traffic. But I think as long as you keep your wits about you and know where you're at all times, and I don't see any real major issues. I've spent most of a lifetime climbing around those mountains and having some small interactions with groups of immigrants at various times, but really nothing severe.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are worried about the narcotics trafficking. Mm-hmm. And
right,
there is that. Yeah,
sure.
I mean, you don't want to get caught in a situation.
Absolutely.
But if you steer, they don't want to be... You just see them as much as you don't want to see them.
They're absolutely trying to avoid us. And I spent about 12 years living down in that Rio Rico, North Nogales area.
Yeah.
So I lived right kind of down in the heart of that.
That's it.
Lived in 34A on the border of 36B there.
Yeah.
And raised my family down there and spent a lot of time right down in that border country. I don't have a lot of concerns out there. I've bivy hunted and backpacked that country and spent time out there overnight and spent years and years and years doing each and every one of those rifle seasons and bow seasons down there and with minor interactions for the most part. So as long as you just try to stay safe and know where you're at all times and keep your wits about you, usually don't have any problems.
Yeah, exactly. I had As far as narcotics concerned, the only one that really sticks out in my mind is I was glassing, and a plane dropped in super low and dropped the package.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat back then, I just kept glassing for deer or whatever. I was probably up there for another 3 hours, and I just kept going back to that spot and looking and seeing whatever. And finally, it's time for me to go. And so I didn't want to go to the package because, God forbid.
Yeah.
But I went fairly close, and I knew that I could sneak in there without being seen. And I marked it with my GPS, and I went up and I told the Border Patrol about it up at 3 points. And yeah, so. But other than that, I never really had any. I've had, like you said, water stolen. Sure. I've had people come into camp at night, looking for food and water.
Yeah, absolutely. But I've had dozens of interactions over the year. None of them have ever been very scary or putting anyone in any jeopardy or anything, so for the most part. But yeah, something you definitely got to be aware of, and it makes it a little interesting down there. Makes it kind of adds a unique aspect to the hunt down there when you've got some other folks out in the hills.
Yeah.
Usually it's not a problem. And it's unfortunate because the hunting down there is absolutely fantastic. It's our highest density of coos deer right along the Mexican border. You can see just absolute gobs of deer down there. There's more deer down there than there is up in central Arizona, for sure. And so it's really, really good hunting. It's a shame that it's been like that, but like I said, it's getting a little bit better, and it's still certainly worth going. It's still certainly worth hunting, and it's great, great, great country.
Just not where I go.
Yeah. stay out of my spot, and then you're welcome to all that other country.
Exactly. Well, getting back to hunting deer in Arizona, we talked this, the over-the-counter archery. Let's talk about the draw system a little bit.
Sure.
And the bonus points and so on and so forth. Let's start with the bonus point. How does the bonus point system work here?
Sure. So every time you apply and are not drawn for a tag, you receive a bonus point. If you apply 5 years in a row, whether you're drawn or not, you get a loyalty point, which is like a permanent point as long as you continue to apply. And your hunter safety, if you have an Arizona hunter safety class, that's also a permanent bonus point that follows you kind of through your hunting career. And so there's an opportunity to have two permanent bonus points if you're someone who applies regularly and has done it for a few years. A lot of our hunts there, especially southern Arizona, like we've been talking about, 1, 2 points, in some cases 3 points, guarantees you a tag. And that's because we have 20% what we call the max pool. 20% of Arizona's tags go to folks that have the highest number of bonus points for that particular hunt.
Okay.
Or for that particular hunt number. And so it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean if you've got, you're not comparing your number of bonus points to folks who are applying for a kibab permit or even a late hunt or something like that. So it's the highest number of bonus points for that particular hunt. Is that 20% max pool. So say you've got 100 permits in a unit, 20 of those tags are going to go to those guys that have the highest number of bonus points. So if you get up into that category, which down in southern Arizona, well, that's 2 and 3 points in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. As you get up here into central Arizona, that starts to creep up higher, 3, 4, 5 points. And then as you get into our late hunts, that's more like 7, 8, 9, 10 points.
Right.
And then, of course, we've got some mule deer hunts that are quite a bit tougher to draw than that. That's not saying that you can't draw a tag at any time, particularly from a non-resident perspective. 10% of our tags, 10% of our total tags go to non-residents. So back to that easy example where we have 100 tags, 10 of them are non-resident tags, but only 5 of those tags are going to go in the max bonus point pool. So 5 of those guys are going to, 5 guys that have the highest number of points for that particular hunt number are basically guaranteed to draw those tags. And those other 5 are random draw for non-residents. So even sheep tags, premium elk tags, all of our tags, there is tags available now, especially since that law change, tags available for non-residents to draw. So it's certainly worth applying.
Right.
A lot of guys I know are on that bonus point schedule where they're just trying to build bonus points and they're not actually putting their name in the hat for a tag. Now I think that's a mistake. You've got a chance to draw at any time now, so might as well build those points and keep your name in the hat for that 5% of the random draw tags. So,
a mathematical chance every year.
You do have it. There's a mathematical chance. There's tags that exist, and that's one of the problems with Arizona's draw. Having 20% of those tags that go to the max pool, we've got in cases like our sheep, it's 20% of all the tags. It's not per hunt number.
Right.
So it's very different than elk and deer and such. But what happens is a couple of our premium units get completely eaten up by that 20% max pool. Mm-hmm. So in Arizona, with the way that the non-resident system used to be up until a couple years ago, and the way that our, say, sheep and buffalo operate now, there's a few hunts that you don't have a chance to draw. There was never a tag available there for you to draw. And so that's not the case anymore with this new non-resident law, other than, say, sheep, for example, or maybe buffalo.
Yeah, because if there's one tag, you can't give 10% of one tag.
Exactly. So what they were doing is giving 10% of the total number of tags. Yeah. So they'd give, it'd be 95 or 100 sheep tags in Arizona, and 10% of those are going to go to non-residents. 20% of the tags are going to go in the max pool. Well, you'd take Arizona's top two or three most popular units, and they'd get completely eaten up by that 20% right. guys. And so there was never, unless you were a max point holder, there was never a tag for you in 24, for example, or in 22, or a 6A Rocky tag.
Yeah.
It didn't exist. So there's a lot of wasted applications in Arizona. Less so now that they did the 5-5 split with the non-resident random tags.
Right.
Certainly that's the case. You've got to be aware of what you're applying for, especially on those really difficult to draw hunts. Because in some cases, there's really not a tag available for you to draw. You're making kind of a false application, basically.
It's smart to do your homework on that.
Absolutely.
For sure. But, I mean, now there's opportunity for you to draw.
There is. Now, that's changed a little bit with this 5-5 split, because now you're going to have non-residents showing up with, get a high draw number and draw a desert sheep tag and kind of maybe a less popular unit or kind of a mediocre average sheep unit. Lots of folks, 5% of all the elk hunts we see, 5% of them are going to be folks that drew with a random number of points, non-residents that drew with 1, 0, 2, 3 points on some of these premium elk tags. So things are changing in that aspect. Right. There's actually a chance for our non-residents these days.
So just in clarification, and correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. This is the way I simplify it in my brain of how the bonus points itself works. So there's a hat with 100 numbers in it.
Uh-huh.
And if I have 5 bonus points, I pick 5 tags out of this hat. And the number that I picked that's got the lowest number, that's my draw.
That's your draw number. Correct. Exactly. So that's basically how many chances, your bonus points equals how many chances you have to draw a low enough draw number to get a tag. So say you draw number 750, and your first choice is some premium elk permit, and out of the first 750 applications they looked at, they ate up those 20 premium elk permits. Mm-hmm. But your second choice is a much less desirable tag. It's a late rifle bull tag, or it's a cow permit or something. You're likely going to draw that because you've got a low enough draw number that there's still tags available. 80% of our tags are random non-residents. So residents in Arizona have a really good chance. We've got 80% of the tags are going to get drawn by random non-residents with any number of bonus points. So that's that huge luck factor in Arizona. You can earn a tag and essentially guarantee yourself a tag. Now you've got to really kind of follow point creep. Things kind of start to creep a little bit as time goes on. So you've got to kind of follow point creep. But basically, with some really good research, you can guarantee yourself an Arizona tag at a certain time period. But the best part about Arizona is that you can draw that at any time leading up to that. You've always got a chance to draw. More so with residents, obviously. But now with this new non-resident split, that opened up a lot of opportunity for non-residents to pull some tags.
Cool. Yeah, it took me a while to wrap my head around what a bonus point was like.
Sure.
You know, and then, I don't know, somebody mentioned it, you know, kind of almost put it in the way I put it.
Sure.
And it kind of now makes sense to me when I look at it that way. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay, now that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But
I like Arizona's system. There's a few different systems across the West. In some states we have preference point systems where you actually have to hit a certain number of points to draw that tag, and all of the tags go to those folks that reach that certain number of points. I also like Nevada's system with the points squared.
Okay.
It really puts more emphasis on guys who have high points. So if you've got one more point than me, you've got 8 points and I've got 7, that squared, that's 49 versus 64. So now you've actually, 1 point actually gets you kind of an exponentially larger chance to draw a tag. And so it puts more weight on the higher number of points you have. And so it's kind of a weighted point system. So I really like theirs, but I do think Arizona has a solid system.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about actual hunting in Arizona. How do you like to approach your season? You know, if you were going to hunt, if you could hunt, let's say, all the way through. Well, you do, because you're hunting with clients.
Yeah.
So how do you like to take you know, from early season all the way to, you know, how do you differentiate? How does your tactics change, you know?
Oh, wow, really good question. I could go on that, I think, all afternoon. I probably approach it from a little bit different standpoint than most folks do, but we're typically in Arizona, we're typically hunting specific animals. Mm-hmm. That's usually our goal. And so we're not actually just kind of randomly hunting country searching for it. So whether it be early archery season or a general rifle tag in October, November, for the most part, we're typically working on a particular deer or two that we're attempting to kill. And so I think our focus is pretty tight in that aspect. Where we're not covering a lot of country. We're not roaming right. around. We're not looking at other spots. We're really focused in on something pretty small. And so that's kind of my main focus is finding particular animals to hunt, whether they be elk or deer. But the season's changed dramatically. I mean, I think most of our, we do a lot of spot and stalk early archery season stuff. We will do some sitting that time of year.
Okay.
Of course, come, October rifle seasons, it's all generally deep hikes in up to the top of the biggest peaks around and glassing and all pretty much all spot and stalk. And then as we get into the late season, we switch back over and do a little bit more bow hunting in the late season and employ a lot of whitetail tactics, a lot of traditional whitetail tactics. We hunt out of tree stands, ground blinds, we utilize bleeding yeah. and rattling and a lot of traditional techniques. That most whitetail hunters would be certainly familiar with. Although things are a little bit different here. Our coos deer are home bodies, you know, they right. spend a lot of time in really small areas. And so your focus seems to be a little bit tighter, especially compared to guys who are used to hunting mule deer.
Yeah, yeah.
You get a lot of Western guys that come down here after coos deer and can't grasp that tight little home range concept that most coos deer follow behind, other than maybe say the rut.
Right.
And they're a little bit more mobile, but so I'd say we do a lot of sitting in the early season, plus some spot and stalk, and then the majority of our stuff is truly spot and stalk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of glassing and looking over country, but typically if we're doing our jobs right, looking for a particular animal,
yeah.
for a certain animal that we've already located.
So I assume you're running a lot of cameras and stuff.
I do.
Then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is going to become an issue here pretty soon.
Yeah.
As we're all aware.
Yeah.
So. I do run a lot of cameras. We're going to have to adjust when this law changes here pretty soon. And I think I'm going to adjust just like a lot of other guys do. We're just not going to run cameras on water. We're going to
yep.
run a lot more cameras on trails and just kind of out in the deserts and in the forests on some different spots. Salt, although it's extremely popular right now, I bet it's yeah. going to be a lot more popular in the next couple of years.
Yeah, which is going to make it less effective.
Which is going to make it extremely less effective. That's happened in a few areas, some core concentration areas around Payson and some of the yeah. rim country that get really heavily hunted. And that's we ran into issues a few years ago where the amount of corn piles up
yeah, there I was gonna say.
Were so heavy that they became ineffective
right.
because there was 3-4 corn piles running down every ridge. And we're going to end up in that same situation, I think, with salt. We're going to have a surplus of salt in all our heavily hunted areas, all our most popular country, all our accessible country.
Yeah.
We're going to end up with a surplus of salt in these 400-yard radiuses around the water, 440 yards from the edge of water sources.
Yeah.
Yeah. Starbursting out in a few directions, we're going to have too many salt licks here before too long. So I think that's going to become an issue here pretty soon. And like things like usually happens, it's going to become an issue, and Game and Fish is going to have to address that. And
yeah.
I just see this as the start of that changing
yes.
as well.
You know? Before long, it's going
to
be.
Before long, they're going to get. Yeah, you're going to have to get rid of salt because salt's then going to become
yeah.
the issue.
Right.
If guys aren't fighting over trail cameras on water, they're going to be fighting over who salt looked at, who put that salt there first,
yeah,
and who
yeah.
put a camera on that salt, and
oh,
so
cool.
on and so forth. So, it's going to.
It's a can of worms.
It's a can of worms. It's a never-ending cycle, and it's not getting any better.
Yeah.
A lot of technology out there these days. So I'm not totally opposed to the camera ban, especially the aspects of the texting cellular cameras.
Right, right.
I see that. I see the argument there. I certainly
yeah.
can understand the argument. Cameras on water, I think Arizona's hunters are getting punished for what the guys up on the strip are doing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a shame. It's not a problem anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You can scour Arizona's units, everything other than with a few exceptions in some elk spots and of course the strip.
Right.
You don't run into those issues anywhere else.
No.
Those issues aren't an issue in 95% of Arizona hunting situations. And so Arizona's hunters are getting punished for some overzealous use of trail cameras up on the strip and some issues that that's caused up there.
So why not just take it out of there? That's like
exactly. You know, no, I couldn't agree with that more.
Take it away from where the problem's at.
Yeah, if you got rid of cameras in 13A and 13B or got rid of them off of water, it would dramatically affect the guys that are hunting up there.
Yeah.
But that's where the issue is. And so you can't really regulate it and say, well, you can only have one trail camera on this water, and if someone else has beat you to it, then no one else is allowed to put one there.
Right.
That's just going to cause all sorts of other issues.
I would say, for me, I think you could run trail cameras before the season, and then once the season starts, like Montana does.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to a law like that.
Yeah,
you got to pull your cameras prior to the season, 48 hours prior to the open of the first season. I don't have any problems with that at all. I think that something like that would work.
It allows the
balance of us to run cameras out in the rest of Arizona where things like this aren't an issue.
Yeah.
And you're not running into other cameras and not constantly bumping into other cameras. It doesn't punish the rest of the state. And to be fair, you've got to pull your cameras prior to the season. It keeps fair chase. They've got to change how this law is getting written, because right now, you can't place a camera on a waterfall for the purpose of taking a deer.
Right.
And so I can go run cameras and put them right on waterholes and just say, well, I'm not going to hunt this waterhole.
No.
And then I just go home to you and say, hey, John, I got all these bucks coming in on this waterhole.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you go sit this waterhole? And so there's no, enforcement and regulation of that's going to be terrible, because guys are just going to not put a camera, not put a name on the camera and say, I don't know whose camera that is.
Right.
And so they're going to go hunt the waterhole. There's going to be cameras around the waterhole, and no one's going to claim them if a game and fish officer shows up.
Yeah.
So enforcement of that, I just don't see
how that's going to work.
Whose camera is that? And the only guys who are going to be the honest guys that fess up and write their name on their camera.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing that, then you're going to be running your camera by the regulations, probably.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's just a can of worms that's going to be unenforceable is what's going to happen. No matter how they write this law, it's going to be basically unenforceable. And so it's going to cause a whole other string of issues that I'm seeing.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry I took us down that rabbit hole.
No, no, it's a big controversial issue in Arizona right now with hunters. It's on top of everyone's list right now. So I'm glad that we brought it up.
Actually. Yeah.
So.
No, I like your insight on it. You kind of have the same viewpoint that I do.
Sure.
But, believe it or not, especially the guys that are guiding up, you know, on the strip and stuff like that, they're making a big stink about it. But, and I get it, because their livelihood, you know, depends on them being able to kill big bucks, and how you
Absolutely.
Kill big bucks is by locating them up there.
It's a tough place to locate deer up there.
Yeah.
And that trail cameras, and I don't think anyone can deny that trail cameras have been a great asset up there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And have allowed them to find bucks, older age class bucks, hunt particular bucks that they would have normally not found. And I think some of the guys who were hunting up on the strip have made a good argument, and they're saying it's allowed us to pass these, say, 3.5-year-old bucks that are 220, 230 inches, and they've got a little bit of history with them. And where that buck would have normally been shot as a 230-inch giant opening morning of the season, they're actually letting him slip through, letting him slide through, because they know he's only 3.5 years old, and he's got the potential to be a much larger deer down the road.
Right.
So I certainly see that argument also.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a little bit of management involved, you know, with trail cameras. There can be, certainly. So.
Yeah, most of the guys that are up there that are running, you know, those cameras, those are the guys that are spending the time up there and want to manage it, because
Absolutely.
That's their bread and butter.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
and the guys who are willing to pass a 230-inch deer because he's only 3.5 years old and has the potential to be a 260-inch deer.
And those aren't guys that are abusing the, you know, the wildlife that's being perceived anyway, that by the whole.
And there's a lot of arguments, you know, for and against the trail cameras. Folks are saying that trail cameras keep animals off water.
Nah.
That hasn't been my experience.
No.
That's how we get pictures of the animals.
Yeah.
They're standing in front of the cameras typically.
Yeah.
And so, I've seen some deer snap their head up as the cameras if a flash went off or an infrared went off. But for the most part, our wildlife coexists pretty well with the cameras. It doesn't seem to be a big issue.
The millennials.
Yeah.
They're all about the technology now. So, but Speaking of millennials, this is actually, since we kind of got off the hunting topic and we're talking about, you know, some of the controversial stuff, you know, I've been kind of trying to make a push towards hunter recruitment and a push for retention of hunters. I think we're bashing on each other a lot on social
really
media.
Yeah.
And it's causing a lot of people to be like, I don't want to do this anymore. Sure. Or I don't want to be part of that community anymore.
Sure.
So I think, you know, I know that our numbers are declining, and they have been since the 80s. What do you think some of the reasons are that we're...
Oh, man, there's all kinds of reasons. Urbanization, for the most part, folks have just lost a lot of those old traditional ways and a lot of those old family traditions, probably how you grew up hunting. I know certainly how I grew up hunting. I think social media has really been hard on us for the last 5 years or so. It's really dividing a lot of hunters.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of factions of hunters now that are kind of warring against each other. And that didn't used to be the case.
No.
So I don't think social media has been our friend at all.
Nope.
I think it's really, really done some bad things for hunting and for the future of hunting. And so I don't know how that we avoid that. We're down that rabbit hole at this point.
Yeah.
As you say, we're in the social media. There's no way that we can essentially remove hunting from the social media spotlight.
No.
And so we're going to have to find a way to do it, figure out a way that everyone can get along and kind of work through that stuff and get around it. And I think we just have, it's always that just couple percent of the real vocal. Some of the bad apples can be real vocal.
Oh, yeah.
and make a bigger stink, and there's still that vast majority of guys who get along great and don't have any issues. But you know how the internet can be, with a little bit of extra courage, a little bit of keyboard courage.
Oh, yeah.
There when you're hiding behind a keyboard and it just gets out of control these days on
for sure
that. So I don't have any real great solutions on how to rein that in, other than everyone kind of self-policing.
Yeah.
And doing the best that they each can personally to kind of keep things smooth and on the up and up, put our best foot forward, try to present the best image that we can as hunters, and it's about the best that we can do these days.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more.
To fight off the storm.
I think, you know, in the public eye, we should all be doing our best to, you know, not offend non-hunters.
Sure.
And when we're talking to non-hunters, have them understand what your passion is, not necessarily, you know, sharing killing stories.
Sure.
Or whatever, you know. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about the inner factions and all the different, like, you know, groups and cliques.
Yeah.
You know, just because you're a bow hunter, I'm a rifle hunter, or whatever, yeah, you know, the case may be, we're all hunters. We're all trying to fight for the same, and we're such a small group. Mm-hmm. And that really, we just need to be so much more unified. And I think what people need to do is just take it off social media. If you got a problem with this guy, or if he makes, even if, like, let's say you put an outrageous post out there, something that I know is going to be
controversial,
sure, whatever, not taken well by a non-hunter season or anti-hunter season, forget about it. Instead of bashing you online, send you a message.
Yeah,
hey,
absolutely.
Matt,
something
you know,
you feel strong about and you're willing to...
Hey, I don't know if you should put that up there, because, you know, you running over a javelina with your quad is not exactly, you know...
Yeah, yeah.
Not exactly hunting, and you're not, you know, portraying something good. I think you should take it down. You know, approach them like a human being and be like, listen, this is what I think, and I think you should take this off or whatever, you know. But it goes so much deeper. I mean, we fight about who shoots what bow.
No, absolutely.
You
know, that's how Arizona's hunters lost trapping back early 90s. Is those factions and apps. They say, well, I'm not a trapper.
Yeah.
All the hunters in Arizona, all the sportsmen hunters.
And it was that foot in the door for these anti-hunters to come in.
if we're warring at ourselves, the recurve guys don't like the archery guys don't like the crossbow guys, none of them like the rifle hunters. Everyone's kind of at war with each other. Those individual small groups can't win any of these battles.
Right.
We need to win these battles as hunters as a whole, whether you're just a strict squirrel hunter and that's all you do, or you only hunt birds and you could never care less to hunt big game in your life, or you've never hunted birds and you only hunt big game.
Right.
We all need to realize that we're all here kind of on the same team. And I think that's what's been the biggest problem. Is we've got these factions of hunters, the Matthews guys versus the Hoyt guys, you know, and it just doesn't make any sense. They really need to get together and realize that we're all just hunters and we're fighting on the same team. And if we can keep everyone on the same team, we can win some of these battles.
Oh yeah, absolutely. People don't realize the only reason why hunting still exists is because of greed. And let me explain that. The hunting and shooting industry and fishing generate so much money, even though we're such a small group.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking billions of dollars. That's the only reason why the government doesn't allow it to go away. Otherwise, we're such a small group.
Well, inconsequential in the scheme of, in the big scheme.
We don't have
things,
a big enough voice.
We do generate a lot of revenue. Well,
yeah. We don't have a big enough voice. We'd be swept under the carpet in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe absolutely. Maybe not the gun thing, because guns is
that's
much bigger. But hunting, they're, you know, it's part of the United States infrastructure. If it went away, I mean, it would crush
absolutely
the economy.
Absolutely. Crush the economy and crush our wildlife populations.
Oh, yeah.
I think hunters don't get enough credit for keeping wildlife around and increasing these
populations. Well, they don't get credit because they don't know. People that aren't in hunting don't know.
Well, you brought up a really good point right there. And that's this brand new thing with, have you heard much about Conserve and Protect Arizona, this organization that's out here kind of fighting for hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And recently they kind of brought up an issue that was a big issue back in 2012 about pulling some tags out of our general draw to create additional raffle and possibly some auction tags. So this is kind of a new thing over the last few days, but speaks to the point that you're talking about. They're attempting to do that to generate money for education,
mm-hmm.
education in the sense of just Conserve and Protect Arizona, using that the money generated from those tags to educate Arizona's public.
Right.
And just to show them and express to Arizona's public how hunters, sportsmen in general, and the Arizona Game and Fish Department are the reason that they have wildlife, and and those are the folks that are taking care of and paying for these wildlife populations. And I think that hunters don't get enough credit for that. And I'm for this. I'm willing to give up some of those tags, let them be raffled off. I think it'd be a fun additional thing for Arizona hunters. It's not going to cost us any additional game. We're talking about pulling cow tags, javelina tags, general season deer tags that you can get in a raffle for $5.
If there was one last general tag in each unit.
Exactly. I mean, 575 cow tags in unit 8. If they take one of them out and make it a raffle tag for $5, 574 cow tags doesn't make any difference in the scheme of your draw odds. But it adds an interesting aspect to Arizona hunting. It adds a little extra chance to kind of win a hunt.
I agree.
And it pays to educate our public on what the Arizona Game and Fish Department and Arizona sportsmen have done for wildlife over the last 100 years. It's been 100 years since we put elk in Arizona. From those original 83 elk, we've got what we have today because of hunters.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because people don't realize, and I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm going to give you some arbitrary numbers, that 25% of the population are hunters, 30% are anti-hunters, or I don't think it's even that high. I'm sorry. I think it's 15% and 20%, and 35% make up anti-hunting and hunting,
mm-hmm.
and the additional 65% of the population mm-hmm. is they're not either for or against. Mm-hmm. And that's the public.
We're never going to sway the anti-hunters.
Right.
And so you're focused on that 60, 65% of the general bulk of the population that could really be swayed either way on a whim in some cases.
But look like Cecil the Lion type stuff, you know?
You get those lion presentations in front of them and they start talking about ocelots and jaguars and stuff like that that are endangered animals that haven't been hunted in decades. And pull on some heartstrings and try to pass these lion and bobcat initiatives, which fortunately got around this first one, but you know they're coming back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, for sure. Well, cool, man. Thanks for coming on and taking the time. And
my pleasure, man, absolutely.
Supporting the shoot, supporting
anytime.
The podcast.
Anytime.
where can our listeners find out more about Borderland?
Borderlandadventures.com. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, and all over the place.
Cool, man.
So, absolutely.
Love what you do.
All
keep
right,
it up.
Much appreciated, brother.
Thank you.
All right, good to see you again. Thanks again.
Hey, one more thing. If you like the podcast, you will enjoy my blog, www.johnstallone.me. It's full of how-to type and tactic type articles, real honest gear reviews, and much more. Also, be sure to check out my YouTube channel for additional content from this show, plus how-to type tips, gear reviews, and my hunting adventures. So just type in John Stallone into your YouTube search, and I should pop up. Be sure to subscribe. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.